Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, episode 11 of season 2. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet, and David Todd from The Hammer Speaks. Dave, the Steelers in the big preseason game, game 3 against the Atlanta Falcons Saturday tonight, more or less the closest they're going to get to a dress rehearsal. Pretty good. I'm probably not as enthusiastic as most people out there. Certainly the first team offense, again, looked very strong. They got a great test because Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons came out and threw the ball all over the field. And my view of a game like this was, if you're going to find holes or you're going to get exposed, this is the time to do it. Not that it doesn't matter, but the games don't count. And I think the Steelers learned some things. I think they've got some issues, but generally, overall, an encouraging performance.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, David. And we said going into this game, I thought it was going to be a great test because of Matt Ryan, Roddy White, Julio Jones, Tony Gonzalez, more interested to see how he matched up against their offense. I had a feeling they would throw a lot. I didn't think Matt Ryan would throw, like 42 times, throw a lot. But, it was a good test on against a defense minus, both their starting corners in Ike Taylor and Bryant McFadden. And, I thought they played pretty well overall from a defensive standpoint. They only, if memory serves me, I think there was just the one big play of 22 yards by Matt Ryan in that game. And when you figure they held him to 22 completions on 42 attempts, 220 yards, and just the one TD, I thought they lived up to the challenge. It was classic LeBeau defense, kind of play off, make him take the underneath stuff, which he did. They got away with getting beat one time deep. I think it was William Gay and Donovan Warren were beat by Jones one time, but he wasn't able to haul it in for a touchdown. You're going to have those type plays, and it's going to be up to the receiver to make the play on that, which Jones didn't. But overall, I think if you break it down, yards per attempt for Ryan and Redmond combined, it's in the low 5-point range. And, they tackled well and only gave up one touchdown.
Yeah, let's get to before, as our longtime listeners know, we get into these games. We're going to because this game is as close as we're going to get to a real regular season game. We're going to get into some of the nuts and bolts of the game like we do every regular season game and really go through what happened on the field. But let's get through some of the news of the week. The first thing that came out, I think it was officially announced today, or wasn't officially announced today, and you might have been the first guy who actually noticed it, is Kevin Colbert in the 2011 Steelers Media Guide is now listed as general manager. Now, we know that Kevin Colbert's basically calling all the shots, pulling all the strings behind the scenes in coordination with Mike Tomlin and his staff. This seems like a promotion in name only. Is there anything more to read into this?
I don't think so. And I think it was Ed Bouchette, I think, that had it up first thing this morning on that. But I double checked the media guide and all like that. And for sure, that's the way it's listed. We don't know. I can't see where he would get any more duties than what he's already doing. Let's face it, he's already in charge of the draft and player personnel and football operations and all. And maybe this is just a pat in the back. Kind of a title adjustment. I'm sure there's probably some more money involved too, but the Steelers haven't even released a press release on it. It's just a different title in the media guide. So, nothing. I don't think there's really anything to read into it other than just a name change.
Yep, I think it's might just be something as simple as having their positions aligned with how most other teams in the NFL. Call their personnel. So who knows exactly, but yeah, I'm with you on that. The second piece of news, and this came out Sunday afternoon. As most people know, the Steelers need to get their roster down to a league mandated 80 players by 4 p.m. on Tuesday. And the Steelers made 6 roster moves on Sunday. Not unexpectedly, Baron Batts goes to the IR, the 7th round pick out of Texas Tech, a kid who looked like he very well could be the 4th running back and have some 3rd down responsibilities, tore his ACL up. Had surgery already. he'll be back in camp when he's, you know, in next spring's OTAs. And so the obvious move there, he goes to the IR, and then five players were released: tight end Vaughn Charlton, cornerback Kevin Dockery, wide receiver Eric Greenwood, wide receiver Kenneth Moore, and tight end Miguel Chavez. None of these are surprises. Let's just quickly, I'll give you our listeners, because some of the names probably aren't very familiar. Dockery was the cornerback, one of the two cornerbacks they brought into camp in the past week. Greenwood is 6'7", wide receiver. The Steelers are always looking to bring in guys like that, like Wes Lyons, like Greenwood. I'm a little surprised he went in the first five guys, but I'm not surprised at all he went. Kenneth Moore, another receiver, is a guy who the Steelers actually used on a punt return in the second half. He's out of Wake Forest, a 5'11 guy. He's not a rookie. And they used him to return a punt deep in their own territory, which he did a fair catch yesterday. A guy who was never going to make the team and probably not even a candidate for the practice squad. He goes. And then maybe the most intriguing guy in terms of this list, Miguel Chavez, the defensive lineman from Clemson who got converted to tight end early in camp. I thought that move signaled it signals a couple things. One is they didn't think he was going to be anywhere close to being capable of making the team or the practice squad on the D line. They're short at H back and tight end, trying to figure out exactly what they're going to do. So they obviously saw some athletic potential and talent in this kid, not enough to keep him in the first 80 cuts. So not big news, but any thoughts on those particular guys?
Well, I had Greenwood, and I always like to try to project everything before it happens just to kind of test my knowledge and all. And I had actually Greenwood and Chavez. I had them as cuts. But primarily Chavez, this is a kid too that tore his pectoral late in the game against the Falcons as well. So I knew he would be waived injured. There was no other way to go with that. I think he would have stuck though another week, had he not been injured in that game, just so they could take a longer look at him. But none of these guys would have, made the 53-man roster. And after the batch move is made and all, I think that puts them I think there are about 84 active players on the roster, and the rest of those four moves, should be made. Well, they have to be done by Tuesday, but I would expect those people already got their walking papers, and all that's left is just the paperwork to go through right now.
Yep, I'm with you on that. Those people probably know that. I expect that news will come out this afternoon as we talk on Monday.
Yeah, the few names that I think that you could see there, I think Colin Miller is a guy that center guard type I think you could see let go. James Johnson, who we barely have seen, a backup running back way down on the depth chart, is probably out the door already. And Travis Turner, the big tackle there. So, those are a few names I expect to come off. Who the fourth one is, I don't know. It could be Brent Greenwood, that extra safety, or Niles Brinkley, the extra corner. But we should know those anytime now.
I was a little surprised seeing Colin Miller on the first team punt team early in the game. It's just one of those he was lined up inside, one of those, a guy who clearly isn't going to make the team. He's clearly not in the picture even for a practice squad role. I was surprised to see him out there early in the game. I don't know if he was just filling in for somebody or if he had a role there. But with this game, we generally saw early on the special teams units. And I think, I think that's kind of telling stuff. You see who's on the special teams units in a game like this, who's in the first team punt and kick coverage and the return teams. And then you figure out, how likely they are to make the roster, because the Steelers are probably pretty close to having those positions set in terms of those coverage units. And you saw Stevenson, Sylvester, Larry Foote, Arnez Battle, that group of guys, Worlds, Mundy, Timmons. You saw those guys out there making the plays. And to see a guy like Colin Miller there, it definitely made me go back and rewind the tape a few times to make sure I got the name right.
Funny you should mention paying attention to that, because I did just that over the last few days, wrote down who were on those first teams as far as kickoff coverage team went. It was Larry Foote, Ryan Monday, Will Allen, Isaac Redmond, David Johnson, of course, Antonio Brown. This is on the return team, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Cameron Hayward, 23, Keenan Lewis, Arnez Battle, Stevenson Sylvester and Jason Worlds was on the first kickoff return unit. Now, as far as the first punt coverage unit, of course, you had your long snapper.
Greg Warren.
Yeah, Greg Warren in there. Daniel Sepulveda, Battle, Sylvester, Chris Carter, William Gay, Mundy, and Allen, Jason Worlds, Lawrence Timmons, and Keenan Lewis. So if you're keeping score at home, those were your guys.
Yep, and Jamie McCoy got some burn early in the game with some of those first-team punt guys. I think maybe on the second punt the Steelers had.
Yeah, when they had that penalty or whatnot, second, they switched out a couple of the guys there, and McCoy was indeed one of them.
Yeah, so it's all, you know, as we sit fanatically and watch this stuff and figure out, you know, who's going to make the roster, we're looking at this stuff because if guys are getting burned early in the game on these coverage units, it means they're still, in my mind, they're still in a position to potentially make the team. And that a guy like Colin Miller, I was just surprised to see him there because he clearly is not making the team. Dave, let's get to the injuries before we get to talking about some of the things that happened on the field. The first, and, you know, I don't know if I would call this an alarming injury. It was a severe injury. Byron Leftwich breaks his left arm, had surgery yesterday or today. The Steelers are going to have to figure out how to move forward here. Something you don't want to see happen, and we can talk about forever, whether quarterbacks should ever be scrambling in a preseason game, and it's hindsight. It's so easy to critique that kind of stuff. But the injury is what the injury is, and it's clear from some of the conversation that I've heard in the last 24 hours that the Steelers are not in love with Charlie Batch or Dennis Dixon as their backup quarterback, since they're considering keeping Byron Leftwich around. At a minimum, he's going to be out 6 weeks, could be 8 to 10 weeks. That tells you, I think, all you need to know about how they feel about one of those two guys running the offense.
Well, let's face it. It was a freak injury. Yeah, he had no business, you know, scrambling out of there. He should have just went down or whatnot. But it was kind of freaky. I mean, you could second guess that all day long. But now let's look at the results. I mean, clearly Leftwich was your number two quarterback. It's sad now. We'll never know if Dennis Dixon was actually being showcased for a trade or if he had basically won the number three spot outright. We'll never really know probably the answer to that question. But, I am not. I've made it known several times I'm not in love with Dennis Dixon. I think Batch is, you know what you have in him. He got us by last year after both Dixon and Leftwich were down. Is he a guy that you want, if Ben Roethlisberger goes down in week two or whatnot, is he a guy you want running the offense for the other games? I think you would probably look at maybe bringing in somebody else for him, to compete with if Roethlisberger indeed was down for the year. But that list is, there's not a lot of good quarterbacks running out there. And you already have Kerry Collins back from his short retirement, already back in the league, might even start for the Colts week one, depending on Peyton Manning's situation. But, yeah, I mean, it's not a big vote of confidence either way you go. But let's face it, now it looks like both are going to make the roster. And Leftwich, I guess, if the injury is not a season ender, do you just go ahead and waive him injured with hopes that no other team jumps on him, in the meantime, and you can get him back in 5 or 6 weeks if things start going south?
Well, that's an interesting conversation, and I think that's a conversation you have with Byron Leftwich. I don't remember off the top of my head right now what his contract situation is. Do you have that right in front of you?
I believe this is the final year of that contract as well.
Yeah, that two-year deal he signed, right?
Yeah, let me pull that up real quick here, and I'll be able to tell you. Definitely sounds right.
So the point with him is if it's a wink and a handshake and you say, look, Byron, we need this roster spot, We want to give you the opportunity to come back and play this season, but we can't. If we put you on the injured reserve, obviously that's not happening. You're out for the year. We'd rather not do that, but we also can't afford for 6 to 10 weeks to tie up a roster spot. We're going to waive you injured. We will sign you when you're healthy, and you take the Steelers at their word. And so 8 weeks into the season, you go out, you sign Byron Leftwich when he's healthy. When you make that waived injured settlement, you pay him I would pay him the prorated portion of what he was going to get. And then you can sign him back to whatever contract he had. And that could be a nice arrangement for the Steelers, assuming everybody feels comfortable dealing in each other's word and having a handshake and saying, Byron, you do understand if he's not going to, sign with somebody else, hopefully, and the Steelers at the same time, when he gets healthy, will sign him. So that's one of those things where it's a nuanced discussion. I think the alternative is to put him on the IR, but I don't really know how that serves you any purpose because he's not under contract next year. You're just paying him either way and to bring him back. So it just waving him injured seems to be the way to go to me.
Yeah, it seems like they did a little merry-go-round with him last year too after that injury. I forget what it was. It seemed like they needed McClendon up again for one game or something like that. I'll have to look back through.
I think that's exactly what it was in the second week, yeah.
And through my blog, but I think they did a kind of a late week merry-go-round. I think the ink had barely dried on the paperwork. He was off the roster and then back on the next Monday or Tuesday, however that fell. So he's not a big, you're not going to eat a whole lot of bonus money salary cap-wise. You'd actually save, about $1.7 million by releasing him initially. So, and you're only talking about a quarter of $250,000 that you'd eat towards the cap by doing that, if my numbers are correct. So I think you could see that. I think probably depending if it's not a 9, 10, 11 week injury, then just go ahead and waive him injured for a few weeks.
The other injuries in order of importance, Marquise Pouncey, we were hearing that he re-aggravated the ankle injury that he hurt prior to the Super Bowl. We're hearing different things, and I hate to speculate too much, but they're talking about this being something he may have to deal with all year. It didn't look that severe, but he's got a broken ankle, and that's going to he had a broken ankle, however they want to classify it. It's going to take an extended time to rehab. You hate to see him have that same type of thing. But again, he walked off the field. He feels like he could play Thursday night if he had to. Having injured my ankles plenty of times in athletic events, you tape him up and you go. He's not a wide receiver or running back. Certainly his ankles are vitally important, but this is something that I don't think will impact his level of performance. And if he's talking about playing Thursday and he's certainly able to go in the opener, you don't like to see it happen, obviously, but it doesn't seem that big a deal.
Yeah, he told reporters today that, the calcium builds up in that left ankle, and once it starts breaking down, it gets sore. So, I'm with you. It's lip service that he's saying he wants to play against the Panthers. Of course, yeah, you ask any player, he's probably going to tell you he wants to play the next week. I mean, that's just the competitor in them. But I think it's going to be safe to say that I would be very surprised if Mike Tomlin rolls him out there against the Panthers in a fourth meaningless preseason game. Give him his rest. Let him sit. Let Doug Legursky get the extra snaps. He could use them. And, it may be something he gets dinged every now and again. He might miss a snap or two. But he's a warrior. He's a fighter. And as you said, just tape it up and roll with it.
Yep. Then the next guy in terms of importance and significance on the roster spot, Keenan Lewis, the third-year guy out of Oregon State, a cornerback who everybody knows about his meltdown against Denver in the preseason game last year, then got very few opportunities over the course of the season, played a couple plays in the Super Bowl and didn't really look like he knew exactly what he was doing. He banged up his knee in this game. He's a guy who this is a big year for him. I hate to say make or break. The Steelers are so thin at corner that anybody there has a shot at making the team. And he's a guy who was a reasonably high pedigree guy, being a third round pick. It was hard to tell. It looked like he was maybe hurt badly when it happened, but he said today that he was looking forward to practicing today. So it can't be that dramatic.
Yeah, and let me tell you, when he went down, was sitting on that cart and his facial expression and all like that, I thought the injury was going to be worse than, as bad as we probably feared it would be. But, like you said, he's looking to practice today. I think he's another one. There's no reason to kind of rush him this week if that knee's tender or whatnot. So I would be surprised if he goes. And as you mentioned, he's just starting to turn the corner a little bit too. I thought he played good last week against the Eagles. He started off playing good against the Falcons this week for the most part from what I've seen on tape. And the Steelers are going to need depth this year, and Lewis will be seeing the field at some point. So, let's hope he's okay. He should be all right, and he should be, the primary backup for Bryant McFadden on the left side there.
any other injuries that we need to – Casey Hampton got dinged up a little bit. What else did we have?
Yeah, nothing really major outside of that. You know, Hampton was dinged up, and we already covered a Miguel Chavez, torn pec there. So I haven't heard anything on Hampton since then. I would be surprised if he goes this week as well. I would look for a lot of these second and third, string guys to get a lot of work against the Panthers. When you got an 80-man roster, you might as well use it in a meaningless game leading up to the regular season.
Yep. Well, let's get into the game itself. And things couldn't have started off better for the Steelers. One of the things, again, we can talk about this kickoff rule, but it's not irrelevant. But the fuss that people have made, and in fact, I heard somebody say on the broadcast, since there aren't going to be any kickoff returns this year, well, it's just crazy talk. I mean, there are going to be plenty of kickoff returns, and particularly when the weather gets colder. But right out of the chute, Antonio Brown brings it back 51 yards. That's a good start. He's a dangerous guy, and obviously he had a huge game.
Oh, without a doubt, he did, and he continues to make this jump. He shouldn't have snuck up on anybody. If you've been following the Steelers all training camp, this is a guy that really took advantage of Emmanuel Sanders being down with that foot injury. Hines Ward started camp on the PUP list. It meant lots of reps for Antonio Brown, and he just has made taken advantage of every opportunity thus far. I mean, this kid, the biggest thing we've talked in previous podcasts is I've never been concerned about him catching the ball and route running and all like that. I just had been more worried about his understanding of the offense more than anything. And it looks like he saw that. He's got Ben's trust. I think there's times still where he still makes some route running gaffes, from what I understand, reading a couple of reports, but they're few and far between. And this guy can literally take over a game right now. So, and you saw it the other night. If you're going to cover Wallace and give defensive help over the top on Wallace to make sure, he doesn't kill you, which it seems like some teams have kind of done in this preseason thus far, then that's going to leave a guy like Hines Ward, open in the soft areas of the zone, and it's going to let Brown work the center of the field as well, and that's what you saw, especially on that first touchdown pass where, he's right across the center there, and I found a still
clip. I love that GIF, the picture you put up.
Yeah, that still clip of the pass by Roethlisberger. I don't want to take anything away from Brown here, but Ben put that thing right through a thread of the needle out the diving defensive back on the play, and once Brown had it, he did the rest with his legs there. And as far as the second ball there too, this is a guy that just kept running on the route. The line gave good protection there on his second touchdown, and Brown adjusted his body good to the deep kind of underthrown ball there and snatched it out of the air. So about the only complaints I have about him is him hanging upside down on the fence. And
what the hell was that?
I swear he just won a NASCAR event or something, was trying to pull. I forget who that driver is that likes to climb the fence. But, it looked like he got a little hung up there. And then, of course, the taunting penalty. But you know what? If that guy plays like that, I can deal with the silly every now and again taunting penalty. And as far as his returns go, hey, if you kick it short, it's not going to happen a lot this year, I don't think, until you get into the cold weather months and all like that. But this is a guy that can certainly break one and take it to the house, as we've seen before. So what a weapon this kid is. What a jump he has made. And, boy, we've talked about this a while ago. It certainly does not suck to have Jericho Cotchery as your fourth wide receiver and Emmanuel Sanders as your fifth wide receiver.
Right. Well, it's going to be interesting when we're 6 weeks into the season sitting here talking about it, wondering who's getting the football, because I have no doubt that Manny Sanders, if he's healthy, is going to be the third wide receiver. And Jericho Cotchery is good. The question is, and this is an honest to God question, are we going to see Hines Ward lose some playing time over the course of this season?
I think you could see him lose snaps. It would not be surprising in order to keep him fresh. The question is, who comes in when he goes off? Sanders really performed well in that role last year, having to work in the slot with his blocking and all. But, I mean, let's not forget about Jericho Cotchery. This guy is established at playing that position as well. So to say, I'm going to go against you here, David, even though it's good. I mean, I was really on the Sanders bandwagon last year, but I think that there's no guarantee that this guy gets the number three spot when he comes back. I think.
Oh yeah, no, I certainly don't think he's going to be given anything. I just think we'll see, like we saw last year, when he's back and able to work through practice, you're going to see the talent rise to the top. And he's, he may not be quite as fast as Antonio Brown, but I think he's probably a better receiver. And so it just
he's a better route runner for sure, and he showed his ability to block too when called upon as well. So you know, it all depends on what they're doing vertically. Probably down and distance is going to have a lot to play with it. But yeah, I mean, these are guys that all should have helmets on game day, and we've seen them do some zero formations thus far in the preseason where they've had five wides at time. You know, how do you shut this down?
When's Heath Miller going to get the ball? You know, we saw David Johnson get the first two passes of the game. Basically, he didn't run exactly the same play, but it's the same route by Johnson on a drag over the with Ben rolling out that way. They didn't have the motion on the second play, but you saw that stuff, good stuff, you know, but you just do wonder. I think Heath Miller had 42 catches last year, and that was way down from the year before. You know, if he's targeted four times a game, five times a game, you know, who's going to get all the balls? Ben's going to throw for 4,000 yards this year.
I joked he could throw for 10,000, but there's just not enough balls to go around. You've heard Bruce Arians talk several times about, you know, making sure the media gets that selfishness and over, or selflessness over selfishness or something is what Arians described it. He's thrown that out there a few times when talking to the media, so that lets you know that these guys that are wanting 2,000 yards receiving and all, I don't see it happening, because Ben's going to spread this ball around. The open man's going to get the ball. And heck, at this point, I'd be surprised if you see a guy with 1,000 yards on the Steelers this year. I think even 800 right now is probably more in Wallace's range, considering all the weapons. Now that could change, but yeah, I'm with you. There's not going to be a lot of balls to go around and it's a good problem to have.
Yeah. A lot of weapons, a lot of talent. We'll see how it goes. So my take generally in the first half, just a couple highlights. This is a Falcons team that has a very good defensive line. I think their linebacking core is a little bit questionable. They're okay in the secondary. Their offense, you talked about it, a good young quarterback, some big weapons on the outside, and Tony Gonzalez on the inside, and a solid line. So as you mentioned, and we talked about in the before the game, this is a good test for the Steelers. The takeaways were Lawrence Timmons is a monster, and he might be the best player on that defense this year. I think the guy, you know, I love the guy. I think he's a Pro Bowl linebacker. A little bit of question on James Harrison, whether that explosiveness is fully back, whether he's having some back issues. He never says it's an excuse, but he alludes to it now and then. So there's something to watch there. The corners, I thought Will Gay was not very good. They played very soft coverage a lot of the first half. Cresdon Butler was in there because Keenan Lewis came out. He did some nice things, broke up some passes. Looks like he can run with virtually anybody, which is a big trait. Now he's going to have to learn the defense and that kind of stuff. The safeties, I thought, were fine. You know, Troy made some plays. He missed a few plays as well, but it was nice to see him moving to the point where it doesn't look like the Achilles is holding him back any. And then offensively, you know, some big plays, but Ben underthrew that long pass, as you mentioned, Antonio Brown, the 44-yard touchdown. That pass was delivered late. He did a nice job. Antonio Brown did a nice job of continuing his route across the field, and Ben just didn't get it out there. Now, Brown went up and made a good catch there. I think that was the more impressive of the two touchdowns to me, him going up over the defender and holding onto the ball with his hands. The other one was a good catch, and just he's got wheels. So, all good there. I think you probably have more insight into the offensive line. What you saw, I thought they were okay. I liked the touchdown, the 1 yard run by Mendenhall. You had Ligurski in the backfield. You saw Hills seal his side more or less. Pouncey tied up his guy, and you know you had David Johnson, I think, in motion there. So you had Johnson seal up on the right side. You had Hills blocking down on the left side with Pouncey. And Ligurski closed, you know, opened the hole, but closed off anything else that was residual in there. And Mendenhall went in relatively untouched. So my takeaway there of the first half was Ben Sharp, I really thought the Hines Ward catch was probably something that got lost in Antonio Brown's performance, but a very good catch over the middle. And you know, they have to feel good, but I didn't think it was the performance against the Eagles was probably in total, in sum, a little better when you hit on a 77-yard touchdown pass to Antonio Brown after a sack and a short gain. That you have passes like that during the season, that's going to cover up a lot of other things.
Well, as far as my take on the first half, you nailed a lot of them. As far as the offensive line goes, my report will be up by the end of the day on the offensive line. Marcus Gilbert, I thought, this is a kid that made his first start at left tackle with Jonathan Scott down, and I really thought he played up to the task. Now, you know, he was going against no slouches either, and John Abraham and Ray Edwards and, you know, Jonathan Babineau at times, you know, inside there, and he, you know, he did give up the early, you know, early in the game type of pressure to Abraham, where he was so worried about getting to the outside that Abraham cut back inside and got his hands inside of Gilbert and pushed him back. And, you know, that's going to happen from time to time. But overall, I thought Gilbert played a fantastic game. You know, he switched over to right tackle after his night was done at left tackle for about 9 plays. And I thought he was pretty much flawless there. So this is a guy that got off to a slow start with hamstring problems in training camp and all, but he's starting to show why the Steelers selected him in the second round of the draft. Tony Hills, I thought, played very well too. This is really, you know, he got some more extended time this week than he did against the Eagles because of he having to switch over to left tackle last week. But I thought, once again, he showed that he plays better in closed quarters. This is a guy that's a much better blocker when he gets to the second level. He's a lot more mobile, a lot more athletic. He's able to sustain his blocks a lot longer than, say, a Ligursky or a Trey Essex or a Ramon Foster goes. So, you know, he still has problems when he pulls over to the left side. He likes to stand up a little high, which is because of his size. He's not short and he's not a short, compact type, traditional type guard. But he is mobile, however. So there's going to be times where he pulls, he needs to focus on getting lower to clear out that hole. He's hitting his target. He's just not clearing out the hole as he properly should. As far as the rest of the offensive line goes, you know.
Ask you a question on that touchdown. Tony Hills had both hands down on the ground. I'm not sure I've seen a Steeler offensive lineman do that. What was going on there?
I haven't. I'll have to go back and look at that. That's a good catch on your part there. I'll go back and double check on that. But I mean, it's basically a traditional. You know, he's trying to block down in there, and you have Ligursky lined up in the fullback there. The hole was huge right there through that hole. So whatever he did, you know, he got the job done there. Pouncey got his job done. Both the tight ends did their job on that play as well. So that's a good point. I don't recollect that as far as the stance goes, but I'm going to go back and look at that before I post my report and all. But overall, I thought Cologne played a good game. He had a flag in there on a sack, a few other snafus. Who else are we missing there as far as offensive line goes? We have
Kemo.
Yeah, I thought Kemo played a real good game on his first game back. I didn't see too many errors and all. In fact, he probably graded out percentage-wise the best overall. Ramon Foster looked, you know, he played majority at left guard. I thought he played, it was probably his best preseason game, and that's not really saying too much, though. Trey Essex, though, you know, he got the look at left tackle when Gilbert left, and, you know, I don't know if I was expecting, a Tony Hills-looking guy as far as physique goes. That's something he definitely is not. He still looks a little bit rusty, knocking off the rust off the wheels, if you will. So, you know, he is what he is, though. He's a swing tackle. He can play all four, even five positions on the line, and he gives you, you know, more flexibility than you would if you would have kept a Chris Scott or a Keith Williams, both of whom I fully expect to be released in the final cut down. And Doug Ligursky, he's Doug Ligursky. He has problems, you know, sustaining those blocks at the second level because of his short, compact nature. And he is what he is. He's a backup center. He's a backup interior guard if you need him.
Yep. A couple other notes that I had in the first half is, one, we saw that pitch to Antonio Brown, a pitch reverse or an end around, I guess, is really what it is. And that's a good play. I had talked about in the prior to the Falcons game that you might see some trick plays, some gadget plays from the Steelers. That play, that's run to set up that pass off that play. Antonio Brown's been he's thrown that pass before, so look for that at some point in the season. They run that it's an end around pitch to Brown, and then he can throw from that position. The Steelers ran a little no huddle. We saw that for the first time in the preseason. Everybody's more familiar with the offense. Guys should be able to do that. We know Ben likes to do that.
As far as defense, I failed to talk about defense real quick there before you progress. James Harrison, boy, it was noticeable this week. I think Keith Butler said used the quote, looked like he was running in mud out there. And I think Harrison has pretty much come out and said too that, you know, after the game that it might take him a little bit longer to get back, you know, to 100% or close to 100%. Let's face it, now going into the season, if you're not 100%, you're never going to get back there. One bright spot is Jason World seemed to have a good game, against the Falcons, probably his best game of the preseason by far. And, you know, you worry about Harrison because this is a guy that looks like he's lost a little bit of the strength, and that's to be, you know, that's going to happen considering what he's been through this offseason with the two procedures or whatnot. And he does. He looks like he's had some days off. They've treated him easy in camp, and it might be a, you know, conditioning thing mixed along with some back pain and whatnot, but it definitely bears watching going forward, and it's something to worry about. I mean, even though this is a guy that's an all-pro athlete, top physical specimen, when you deal with that back, man, on a guy that relies on strength and power and speed, it's going to make a difference. So I wonder how much, maybe even early on in the season, we maybe see Worlds come in on some passing downs, on some passing situations type, situations to utilize his pass rush efforts, to spell Harrison a few plays.
Yep, and then in terms of other guys defensively, like I said, I didn't think Will Gay was great. I didn't think he was very good, actually. He got beat on that long ball. Some soft coverage on the corners, but some of that is system stuff. So, I'm not going to worry too much about that.
Gay is what Gay is, and he's a nickel guy. You know, having to start him on the outside or whatnot, he's much more effective, especially blitzing off the edge. And he's a solid tackler too. You know, say what you will about Gay, he's got a lot of haters out there. He's never going to make the Pro Bowl. We know that. He's more of a system guy and matches up a little bit better, against subpar quarterbacks when he's in the nickel.
Yep. Second half, just kind of standard stuff. The injury to Leftwich was the overwhelming thing. I didn't think there was too much to really focus on. One thing is you see how big Swayze Waters' leg is. Oh, my gosh. He's got a big, big leg. And, I don't think anything's going to happen other than him getting released. But he'll be in camps for the next year or two. He's a young enough guy with a big enough leg that if he can get some consistency on his field goals, he certainly has a chance to be in the mix, in the conversation. And if something were to happen to Sean Swisham, he's going to certainly get a look.
I don't think he's going to be without work long, because I think I read where the Saints at Garrett Hartley, I think their kicker's having some issues or injury issues or whatnot. And let's face it, early on in the season, if a new kicker shanks a couple of easy 40-yarders or whatnot, or not kicking the ball in the end zone, I think Swayze, outside of that, he had that rough game, what was it, against the Eagles, I think. Where he missed a chip shot or whatnot. But, I mean, the guy does have a cannon for a leg. I'm willing to bet if the Steelers release him, which I'm almost certain they will in the final cutdowns, I don't think he'll be without work too long. I think he'll be at least on the phone call list for teams to bring him in to work him out to see if he's capable to be signed. But, you're right there.
Yeah, that's right. He's on the phone call list, and he'll get to compete for jobs.
Yeah, as far as, think observations from the second half, we mentioned Worlds there. Cameron Hayward, really haven't heard his name called too much, but I thought he got caught up in the wash on a little bit. The Falcons, after passing nearly all the most of the game, they went through that stretch where they decided to run the ball several times to give that Jacquez Rogers guy some extra looks and all. I thought I saw a few times where Hayward kind of got didn't hold the point well and got caught inside to allow Rogers to get outside. That stuff's going to happen with a young kid. Like Hayward and all. Yeah, as far as the battle for the corners go, you know, you saw Cresden Butler make some plays, as you mentioned. That 95-yard touchdown, that definitely is a splash play, but that was a pretty much a gift because it looked like the tight end or receiver slipped. Looked like Redmond was throwing to a spot on the field there. Butler, uncontested, easy. That's an easy pick to make and take to the house there. As far as defensively, other you know, as far as everything else goes, the linebacker play, the second stringers outside of you know, Sylvester and Larry Foote, I thought they played well. When you get in that deep of the game, third, fourth quarter, though, it's really not much to look at because these guys are not going to make the roster anyhow. But overall, it was a strong defensive performance. They could have had more pressure, I thought, in the first half. But I mean, it's typical LeBeau system. We talk about it several times. Get pressure if you can, make the quarterback take the stuff underneath there, and occasionally you're going to force them into mistakes.
Dave, I know I'm going to cut us short a little bit here because we don't like to go much longer than 40 minutes on these, and because I know for travel time and things like that, and we're going to be getting more of these out. But the roster positions, we're really down to the nuts and bolts of the last things. I don't think anything's really changed much in terms of what we talked about. I know you've put your fourth roster list up on SteelersDepot.com. I had to read through that. That's really good stuff. One of the questions will be, does what happens with Byron Leftwich now? Is he waived, injured? Is he IR? Do they even consider holding a roster spot for him, which I think is the least likely of the three options? But we have guys on the cusp here, and most of these decisions are probably getting made. The one thing that we have corners, and I'll go back to what I said last week, is I think fourth-round pick Cortez Allen is going to the practice squad. I think they'll waive him. Nobody's seen him. He was thought maybe to be a touch of a stretch in the fourth round, and the Steelers obviously drafting late in the fourth round. So he's a guy who, because he hasn't been able to get on the field, and maybe at this point the Steelers don't want to hurry him onto the field to show him any, to show him, to showcase him to anybody. But he's the guy who I think goes. I think
Donovan Warren. Yeah.
I keep calling him Donovan Woods. Donovan Warren probably is in the battle with Arnez battle for that spot, that 53rd spot. And maybe, as you pointed out, Ivy, you know, Chris Carter's going to make the team, but, you know, some of these guys, Mario Harvey's not going to make the team. So maybe it's Ivy and Warren and battling out for that 53rd spot now, if I were going to put three guys in the mix for that.
Yeah, I think it comes down, I think you probably got about 49 or 50 guys easily set at this point. Arnez Battle, I just see him as too much of a special teams, the way he's used, especially on first teams and all the teams in general. And if Sanders is still not 100%, I think you keep six. I think you keep Battle. I think Williams and Chris Scott, I think they've worked themselves right off the roster. Williams to the practice squad. The question becomes with Cortez Allen, you know, is he injured enough to go to IR? Does he go to the practice squad because he has no tape on him, as you suggest? That is a very good possibility, despite his fourth-round draft stature. And the other one becomes, you know, Cresden Butler and Donovan Warren. Are these two actually battling for a spot? I think Warren now, I think probably he's more practice squad material if he clears waivers. I don't think he'd give up on Cresden Butler too soon. And Morty Ivey, he becomes the wild card there. If you only keep six cornerbacks, maybe him or a defensive lineman, maybe like Steve McClendon or Corbin Bryant, grab that 53 spot if indeed you know, they only carry six corners.
Excellent stuff. And the Steelers go back at it Thursday in Carolina. I think that's an 8 o'clock start down there. That'll be it. The final cut down date, as we've mentioned, there'll be four more cuts made in the next 24 hours. They have to be announced Tuesday by 4. And then Sunday, they have to get down to the 53-man roster. And boy, let me tell you, there was a lot of chaos when the season started with free agency, with undrafted free agents. You watch the chaos come on Saturday and Sunday as teams go through. Basically, you have 27 players probably being released by 32 different teams. We're talking about 800, 900 players. If I did my math right, 30 times 30 is 900. So that's roughly where we're going to be in terms of guys hitting the waiver wire. So you think the coaching staffs and personnel people have been busy doing what they're doing. They are going to be scouring this waiver wire. And it was interesting to hear Kevin Colbert during during the week talk about the Steelers will be paying very close attention to this, but will only make what they called a significant upgrade. Because if it's just a marginal upgrade, you'd rather keep your own guy who's been in the system, who you're comfortable with, who may know what you're doing. But if the Steelers do make a move, and the obvious area that they will look is probably tight end, it's a guy who they think will provide, in Kevin Colbert's terms, a significant upgrade. So we'll be back with you no later than Friday after the post game. There's a chance we'll get to you if there's some news during the course of the week. We'll get you something Wednesday afternoon or Thursday. As always, you can email us theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow both of us on Twitter. Dave is at Steelers Depot. I'm at Hammer Speaks. And you can hit Dave up on Facebook. We have all sorts of social media stuff going on, so shouldn't be hard to get us. Love to hear your comments and your feedback. You can always get this podcast on Dave's site on Steelers Depot, and you can also get it on iTunes. And please pass the word around. You know, we've loved the feedback and the support and just looking to grow the show.
Amen to that. We get a lot of feedback on Twitter. And like I said, we hope to do three of these during in season once week one starts. Probably won't have another one until after the Panthers game there. But we appreciate all the support. The downloads have been fantastic. The feedback's been fantastic. And we'd love to hear from you of ways to improve the show, as always.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. Episode 11, Season 2 of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.